What the Tech is sponsored by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/Andrew.
What the Tech?
Hey everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarin, and of course I'm joined by Paul Thorada, as I am each and every week. How you doing, Paul?
Oh, you're awfully excited about that. Hello.
I am. I'm excited you're here.
Me too.
Yeah. Every week I wait for that phone call, like on a Sunday night, saying, Andrew, I can't do this anymore with you. I'm done. Right. This is over.
Well, you know me. I'd wait till the last minute. It'd be like Tuesday morning, 11:58.
Paul, when we started doing the show, Paul said the greatest thing to me, and he goes, listen, I will guarantee you I will show up. That's about it.
Yeah,
that's the most I could guarantee. And I go, that is more than what most people could guarantee me. I'll take it.
Right.
Deal. This is a show where we talk about technology. We talk about things that we like. It's not necessarily a tech news show. If you're listening for the first time, I know there's a lot of first-time listeners the last couple of weeks. I don't know why. A lot of people sending me emails saying, hey, it's my first time listening to this. But we don't talk about the tech news. Some of the stuff involves the news, but it's two guys sitting at a bar and talking about tech, because that happens every day. We were sitting in a bar. That's how we met.
No, I know. I mean, I wish we were now.
Oh, God. You know, I'm on a diet, Paul. I'm going to Vegas.
If I lived in New York, we could do live shows and it would be stupid.
It would be stupid good.
It would just be stupid.
Are you using like the hip lingo street term for stupid? Because that's what I was going for.
Stupid and what I would call the local sense of the word.
Yeah. I'm on a diet. My wife put me on a diet. I'm going to Vegas next month for NAB. And, you know, I have to look sexy for all the radio nerds out there.
Yep.
I'm going to Vegas. My wife decided that it'll be a really fun trip because it's my 30th birthday. It's our friend's 35th birthday and our other friend's 48th birthday. So we're all doing this big thing in Vegas. And it's NAB, the NAB conference that they have there in Vegas every year. So we're like, you know what? Let's go. We'll have a good time. We're staying at the Wynn. And one of the problems that we have is that we got Friday we're staying, Saturday we're staying, Sunday there's no openings.
Okay. So you're going to move or what are you doing?
So I have to move on Sunday and then come back on Monday and Tuesday.
Yeah. I've done that kind of. Not between hotels, though. So you're going where are you going?
The Wynn. Vegas.
No, I know. I mean, for the one night.
Oh, I have no idea.
Okay, yeah.
I don't know. I was telling my wife, I'm like, what if we just don't go to a hotel? Like, we just stay up. It's Vegas.
Right. You could just, that's
gamble a life savings away.
Possible.
It is possible. No, you don't know. I mean, they're pumping oxygen in those casinos. You have no idea where you are. You're waking up, you're thinking it's 2002.
Right. I wish it was too.
Things are so much simpler. We have a lot to talk about today, actually. We're not going to just talk about Vegas. But before we go into our first story of the day, Paul, I want to talk to you about Audible. We do an Audible pick here, and people really tend to enjoy our Audible picks. And I get a lot of emails from people saying, hey, why don't you do it a little earlier on in the show so I could actually hear it? But because by the 45th minute, I'm drifting away. Andrew has totally put me to sleep, but I look forward to Paul's Audible picks. So why don't we talk about Audible for a second? Audible's been supporting the show for a good 3 years now. If you go to audiblepodcast.com/Andrew, you can sign up for a free audiobook. And before Paul does his pick, I just want to say I got into Audible really early. In ninth grade, I want to say, I had to write a book report, and I didn't want to read the book. The book was Along Came a Spider. By James Patterson.
Spider, the James Patterson.
The book? James Patterson book. I had decided that was going to be the book. I don't know why, and I had no time to read. I mean, I totally waited till last second. Audible was out at that point, so I downloaded the audiobook. I listened to it for like an entire day, literally like all 12 hours of it straight. I wrote my book report, and it was phenomenal because I actually sat down and I listened to an unabridged version of the book. Right. After that, I didn't even think about Audible again. couple years ago, because of your show with Leah Laporte, I was listening to Windows Weekly, and you guys were talking about Audible. I gave it a shot again, and I fell in love with the service. I absolutely love the service. My wife uses it. I use it. And a lot of our listeners use it because they enjoy your picks of the week, Paul. So what is your pick this week?
Yeah, if you listen to Windows Weekly, I apologize because this is one I used last week there. But this is actually a fairly important audiobook, especially for the types of folks who would be listening to this podcast. And it's good on two levels. The book is Influx by Daniel Suarez. Excuse me. He, of course, is the author of Demon and Freedom TM and I forgot the name of the other one.
Zero Day.
Kill Decision.
Kill Decision, yeah.
Yeah, so Daniel Suarez has kind of emerged as the new Michael Crichton, which is great. And it's a lot of deep research about science that's kind of on the periphery, that's kind of on, you know, coming in soon. And then fashioning a tale that's about the possible things that could go wrong about that technology or science. And if you've read Demon and Freedom TM, which are two books in a series, you understand like how just amazing these books are. Kill Decision and this book are not part of that series. These two are standalone stories. Influx is the one that just came out. But the guy who narrates these books is fantastic. And a lot of times when you have people narrating a book and they kind of take on other voices, you know, there's a woman character, so he talks a little bit like a woman, or there's an Oriental person and he speaks a little bit like an Oriental person. You know, that kind of thing can go horribly wrong. But actually, the guy who does this book, and as it turns out, he does the other Daniel Suarez books as well, does an amazing job. And one of the things that's in this book is a computer AI. Actually, there's a bunch of different kind of computer AIs. And they do kind of an interesting effect with these computerized voices where it sounds like it's kind of coming off in the distance. It's got a little bit of an echo to it and all that. And so the presentation is amazing. And so it's an amazing book about technology and science. It's got just kind of an amazing audio presentation. So much so that I own them all. I'm going to go back and listen to the other three Daniel Suarez books now on Audible as well, simply because this guy reads them. Well, that and they're amazing stories. So. This is a really, really good one.
It's a phenomenal book. I'm a big fan of Daniel Suarez. So, great pick, Paul. Great pick. How many have you read the book, or are you just doing the Audible?
I'm just doing the Audible.
Very cool. It's easier.
Yeah, the other ones I had read them, and I'm actually not clear. It's funny. I went back. I think I had picked up the middle two books because they were on sale at some time, because I had read them in book form. And I went back and looked at them again, and I didn't have Demon for some reason in Audible format. So I just bought that with my monthly credit, and I'm going to go back and listen to them now because it's the same guy. And, yeah. And he really does make a big difference. People often come to me, you know, email or you know, in person, and they'll say, you make all these Audible recommendations, but if you had to just pick one or two or three, like what are the really big ones, you know? And this one is approaching that, you know, top five area because of the presentation. Because, you know, Audible books can be good, bad, or indifferent because of the story, because of the book, you know, because of the reader. But this one is just one of those kind of perfect combination type things. So it is really up there.
Great pick, Paul. Phenomenal. I love it. Audible.com, audiblepodcast.com/Andrew. Get your free audiobook by going there. Paul, this is what I wanted to talk to you about all week, okay?
Mm-hmm.
iOS in the car, CarPlay, which is a ridiculously stupid name, if you ask me.
By the way, thus, it is a perfect name.
It is a perfect name because iPad and iPhone and
yep.
iTouch.
Well, by the way, it's consistent with AirPlay. I've heard some people complain about it because, oh, I thought Google owned the word Play because of Google Play. Actually, Apple had AirPlay before Google Play. And in that sense, it's consistent. You know, if you think about AirPlay as this way of getting your iOS content onto another screen, in many ways, that's what CarPlay is. It's about getting your iOS content onto the car screen and into the car.
So yeah. I have a couple issues with this. first of all, they announced this a while ago, a long time ago. And they had initially said that it was going to be available on 2014 models.
Yep.
So 2013 for 2014, because that's how the car industry works.
Yeah, this suggested we'd be seeing them at the end of last year.
Yeah, so I was assuming probably like October. We were going to see like October 2014, because that's 2013, because that's generally when a lot of the later cars come out. I didn't expect it earlier on in the year. Surprised it didn't, actually, considering the fact that all it really is that it's bridging your phone and whatever interface is on the car. So technically, the concept behind it is that it's not iOS in the car, right? It's iOS on your device that connects to the car.
Yes.
That's how it was presented.
Yep.
I'm still curious on what happens when it's disconnected. Do you go to like your default OEM navigation system?
Yeah. My understanding of the way that this works is that, although this could be completely wrong, I just want to be clear. It's my understanding is that the CarPlay, now iOS and the automobile or whatever they were calling it, is essentially an app that runs inside of the dashboard, you know, inside of the entertainment system and, you know, the whatever you have in your car. This will vary from car to car, but I don't have a – let me think about that. Well, my wife has a car that has satellite radio, but between us, we don't have a car that has – you know, some cars have apps. Like you could run Pandora or something.
Do you have any cars that do that? I don't.
No. So I don't know what this is like, but looking at the pictures of it, reading the descriptions, I got the idea that this was something that would run alongside other things. Because not everyone's going to have an iOS device. And certainly, well, some people may want just that one option. I don't think most people, you know, it's like a Roku device.
Yeah.
You may want to primarily run Netflix. But, you know, I mean, having Amazon on there, having Pandora on there, whatever you may want to use sometimes, you know, is a nice option too. So I don't look at it as the primary or only interface for any car, but rather one interface. If that makes sense.
No, that totally makes sense. Here's the line of cars that it's going to be available on: BMW, Ford, GM, Honda, Hyundai, Toyota, Nissan, Ferrari, Volvo, Mercedes. So it's actually a lot of cars.
Well, except that eventually it will be.
Eventually. Right now, it's only Volvo, Mercedes, and Ferrari.
Yeah, in fact, this is kind of interesting because last year when they talked about this, they had that full list. It was a lot of cars, you know, a lot of car makers. Just GM right there is, you know, a crazy number of car makes.
4,000 cars a year.
So today, or not today, yesterday, I guess, they announced Ferrari, Mercedes, and Volvo would have the system this year. But these other automakers, actually, it could be.
Who knows when?
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to be the 2014 model.
I mean, look how long it took for a lot of these car manufacturers to get Bluetooth in their car.
Yeah.
I had my 2012 Infiniti did not do Bluetooth music. My 2013 does. My 2012 did not. And think about how long. I mean, 2012, and most a Honda Civic is doing Bluetooth streaming, you know, with whatever model that you're getting. And it took that long for Nissan.
My 2011 car does not do Bluetooth music, although my wife's does. It does, oddly enough, it has a like a USB port. Windows Phone doesn't support music over USB or whatever, at least not in a standard way. I don't think it does at all. But I can plug in a like an iDevice, and even something weird like a like an iPod Nano with a lightning connector, that music goes through the stereo just fine. Just fine.
I'm looking at
it. Actually, if you think about how that works, you know, you would have an option on in the dash somewhere where it would say something like radio, you know, FM, AM, whatever, maybe satellite, maybe line in, like if you have a microphone type port, and USB, which I do have, and then, of course, Bluetooth, you know, if that's an option. I mean, you could kind of imagine this being one of the, it would probably say iOS or something, you know.
How is this going to work if, let's say, like Mercedes is actually working with Google right now also for some Google integration in the car? So are they eventually...
I think it's separate. Yeah, I just think it's separate.
Do you think they're just all going to be able to support, you know, Google's whatever and Apple's service? And if Windows Phone does the same thing, then they're going to have Windows Phone capable, you know, systems.
Because I think what's happening behind here, by the way, is QNX, which is owned by BlackBerry, which is the same thing that Ford has switched to, and that this may have something to do with that. Not so much because they wanted iOS in the car, although, you know, they'll get a CarPlay, sorry. But that they, you know, wanted this option that once you go to QNX, QNX is kind of like the standard in the in car, is sort of evolving as a standard in cars. And so
QNX is on everything. QNX is backing, majority of entertainment systems in the car right now are backed by QNX.
There's nothing stopping you from having two different systems. I mean, I don't have a car like this. I mean, it's like our cars are kind of normal, but there are cars that have a kind of a screen up top that is for car stuff, you know, and we'll have the navigation maps and all that. And then sometimes you'll have a second screen, and that will be the radio and whatever secondary type stuff. I mean, they could be separate screens even, right? Not just separate systems. They could even have two screens. So I think it's going to vary from car to car.
I'm curious on how well it's going to work, because I watched that demo that they had. Did you watch any of it where they actually demoed?
No.
How it, like, they were going through the UI, and it was slow. It wasn't it wasn't impressive. So obviously they're still going to work on this thing, and it's not final, and they haven't released an update yet. No cars are available with this, but from what I saw, it was a little sluggish. It wasn't that great, but I guess for the car, considering how ass backwards the technology in the car is, it's a huge step forward. I'm just curious on where the capabilities are going to be with this thing. I understand you're going to be able to do Pandora and all the other stuff, but where do they stop?
So it's Apple, right? I don't know if you caught this little bit. Let me see if I can find the language they used. But they're going to offer select third-party apps, right?
Well, like Apple TV.
Yeah. So, you know, they're going to be curating that. And the issue there may be if Apple gets into a market that one of these third-party apps is in and maybe they don't want that anymore, you could see the weird thing where maybe one of these apps goes away. I mean, there's no guarantee. But even though there's an iTunes Radio, they are supporting a lot of radio-type apps, you know, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Beats, and so forth. So actually, and Stitcher's in there too, by the way. We'll see. We'll see how that goes.
I'm curious on what the future of this is going to be and how long it's going to take. I mean, we're a good 5 to 7 years away from this becoming a standard like Bluetooth.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
that's why this is why they want to get into it now. They want to be the standard. Apple already did an amazing job. I don't believe there's a car on Earth that you can't get an iPhone/iPod connectivity kit as an option. Like, this is such a common thing. And in many ways, I would think that this is going to work like a more advanced version of that. The question is going to be whether they can update this thing in the car or whether you get into a weird situation where, I mean, at some point you're going to have to get into a situation where the version of CarPlay in the car, you know, dates back to the beginning because it was one of the early ones. And now you have an iPhone 8 or something and it's on iOS 10 or whatever.
See, the way I saw it, Paul, actually, is that the car has no, it's a dummy, and all the updates are being pushed onto your phone.
Onto the phone. Okay.
I mean, that's how I saw it. I mean, I could be wrong. Sure. I read about it, but I didn't really. I'm imagining that your phone is actually doing everything. So when you connect
right, but I mean, there's some point where there's going to be a break, right? I mean, and I think that's the trouble with technology. You know, cars last a long time. These days, especially, these car makers are so far behind.
Yeah, no, you're right. Let's say Apple changes the port.
Yeah, maybe.
You get an adapter, I guess. Right?
I don't say that cynically, by the way. I'm not suggesting Apple is going to purposefully.
Well, what happens? What happens if Apple says? But what happens if Apple says in 3 years this was a total failure? We're losing money on this project. Okay, goodbye. And now you have this.
I don't think that's going to happen. But sure.
I mean, that's a commitment.
They have a lot of partners working on this.
That's a big commitment.
Yeah,
it's interesting. You know, I think I asked this on the show, and you may have given me an answer in the chat room, but I don't understand why it's taken the car manufacturers this long to integrate something like this, or even, you know, they're using these navigation systems, and a lot of them are awful. I really think Garmin makes a solid one, TomTom makes a solid one, but the ones that I've had in my car, for example, are absolutely awful. It's you need to update them every year. It's a total disaster.
Oh, we're still at the point where if you can get it without it, you're almost better off.
You're almost better off.
Everyone has a phone that has this stuff on it, and that stuff's more up to date, and
it's more responsive. It knows exactly where you're going. But I don't understand why they haven't integrated Google Maps. Because I honestly feel that that's better than anything else that they're putting in the car right now.
So you mentioned Mercedes. I think Mercedes is one, maybe the one company or one company that is getting Google Maps. And it's just Google Maps. Like, it's not the whole Android platform. They're getting maps somehow. I don't know.
I'd be happy with that.
Yeah. Right. I think everyone would want Google Maps in the car. Other than the, you know, if you're a privacy advocate or whatever.
It's pretty cool that we could now get this in the car. You know, we're at that level now where it's like, okay, we're almost there. We got another couple of years. Before, it was like a big deal. Like, if you go back 10 years ago, having an in-dash navigation was a big deal.
Sure.
I mean, it was, first of all, it was really expensive. I remember I leased a car and they wanted like $75 more a month to have an in-dash navigation. I'm like, what are you, crazy? Right. I want to use this thing like twice a year. So it's cool that everything is getting integrated. It's becoming this one unified thing. But you bring up some interesting points, like what happens when the updates stop.
Right.
You know, it's fascinating. So talking about Google has overtaken, Android has overtaken iOS as the number one Android, number one tablet operating system. I'm not surprised.
Yeah, I mean, no shocker there, right? I mean, just some kind of interesting numbers to it.
I'm going through the stats here, but do you think it's a fair comparison when you see these numbers? Like when you see that Android is the number one, you know, does it mean anything in the long run? Like, what does it mean? Because I don't know anybody going and buying an Android tablet.
Well, okay, but
like, I know people that have a Nexus. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, they have the Nexus tablet, and that's the one to get. But like, I don't know people that are like, you know, I really want that Samsung Tab 10.
Except maybe they do. I mean, one of the little pieces of data in here is that the biggest tablet brand jump was Samsung. Like, they went from being fairly nothing to being a huge part of the market. In fact, if that growth continues, they will surpass Apple by the end of this year.
Yeah, and that's amazing.
Just Samsung.
They're not cheap, Paul. Like, we're not talking a $200 tablet. Like, they are as expensive as the iPad is. $499, $599.
Right. And the small ones are not the super cheap ones either. The Samsung tablets are full priced. I mean, they're not bargain price. That's very interesting.
So why are people buying it?
I have no idea.
I really don't know that. Like, I don't know. Like, if I have an iPad in front of me and I have, I mean, and I don't, majority Listen. Of our audience, and I know a lot of people don't like Apple, but if you have an iPad in front of you and the Samsung thing in front of you, I don't know why you would pick the Samsung.
Well, oh God. So this is like a rabbit hole that we could quickly spiral out of control with.
Let's go down that hole, Paul.
All right. So one of the things I've been doing recently is I use a Kindle Paperwhite in the morning to read the newspaper on. And this is a very particular usage because if you think about how you could read a newspaper every day electronically, the options are actually not that great. Like, the thing I like about the Kindle is that you actually get the newspaper issue. Like, in other words, I wake up in the morning, it's Tuesday. Tuesday's newspaper is right there. It's not other stuff from the newspaper. It's not articles they published last week. It's
the paper.
Just the stuff that was in today's paper. It's like reading the paper. I like that. What's odd about the Kindle newspaper experience is that depending on the paper, that experience is not consistent from device to device. So I can't read, in this case, say the New York Times or the Boston Globe, on anything other than a Kindle Paperwhite. They don't offer it on their tablets. They don't offer it on the iPad version of the Kindle software. They don't offer it on the Windows version.
So the subscription service, let's say like the New York Times or whatever, when they have a subscription version, it is not the same version as what you're going to get on the Kindle?
That stuff is so messed up. I don't even want to get into it in too much detail. Yeah. All I can tell you is that it's not possible. So some newspapers you can. The Washington Post, I think, is an example of a newspaper you could read on other devices, other Kindle devices. But New York Times, Boston Globe, the two I would want to read, not available. So this kind of limits how I can read this thing. Now, if I owned an iPad, or I would imagine a Google device, an Android device, there's probably a New York Times app, and then I can subscribe, you know, I could sign into it, and I can get that information. But those apps are not the newspaper every day. They're a lot of the content that's on the site. They're updated regularly as new stuff comes in. They've got yesterday's content. They've got last week's content. It doesn't present that kind of newspaper thing that I want. And then if you look beyond newspapers, there's, you know, obviously I read books, and I read a lot of those in the paperweight, just regular books. But then there are books that have lots of graphics, like cookbooks and, you know, picture books and comic books, graphic novels and things like that. And then there are magazines, which is a different kind of periodical, but it works a lot like a newspaper where it comes out every so often and it's often color. And you want to look at that on a digital device, maybe, I'm sorry, I should say a color device, like a tablet, because sometimes, you know, depending on the size of the screen, you can get the magazine layout and all the colors and it's nice looking and photographs look better and all that kind of stuff. And so there's all these options. And so depending on how you want to read things and what you read, you know, you may choose one or more of the devices and kind of split your time between them. And so to date, I have been reading magazines and graphic novels, comic book type things on Nexus 7, which is a fine little device, you know. Lately, I've been experimenting with the iPad mini. I have the, you know, the new Retina model. It's got a slightly bigger screen, which is actually good for this kind of content. But I'm reminded again and again, like, where the Apple stuff kind of falls apart. And some of it's Apple's fault, some of it's Amazon's fault. But the inconsistencies between the Kindle experience on a Kindle tablet, a Kindle e-reader, a Google Nexus Android tablet, and the Apple iPad, and then not to mention Windows Mini tablets, which are the most awful of all as far as Kindle's concerned. It's terrible. So. Yeah. And I'll just tell you two things about the iPad version of this that stinks. One is you can't access the store through the app because Apple wants their 30%. And Amazon's not going to give it to them. And so there's stuff you can, if you read a book and you like it, at the end it says, hey, by the way, these books are just like that. I just did that this morning. I finished a book and I was like, oh, look at that.
Paul, is that why you can't or you couldn't download like Audible, for example? Like you can't browse the Audible library and like buy an Audible book.
Yep, because Amazon is not going to give them their 30%.
That's so ass backwards.
Because they have their own store. We have, you know, why would I give a distributor, you know, like it's, they're the only ones that ask for this. You know, Apple is the only one that tries to get the extra 30% for everybody. So that part of it stinks, and that's Apple's fault as far as I'm concerned. I obviously Amazon could just agree to pay that, but Amazon is an e-commerce company. It's just a lot of money going through these places. They don't want to give a big chunk of it to Apple, understandably. So that's kind of a lackluster experience. But then it's just the software too. The software has different options. And I just noticed this morning. If you, it's very hard to explain in sort of just an audible sense, but if you finish reading a book and you want to remove it from the device, kind of tap and hold on it on the device, on a Kindle ebook reader, on a Kindle tablet, on the Google Android version of Kindle, you get a menu, and one of the menu items will say remove from device. You do it on the iPad version, and there are two things that pop up. One says delete permanently. It's like, wait, what? It's and like then the threat. Other one says add to collection. Now you think, okay, I don't want to delete it permanently. Like, I want it to be in my, you know, my library. I mean, it's a weird language to use. So what does add to collection do? Well, collection is a feature of the Kindle platform. It's like folders. You know, it's a way to collect books and things into folders, you know, to organize them. It has nothing to do with what is really called a library. So the correct option is delete permanently. Like, you're not deleting it permanently. You're removing it.
That's a little threatening. Like, I see permanently. I'm like, I don't know.
So anyway.
Too much of a commitment.
Sorry, but it's a moving back and forth between these platforms. It can be painful, and I guess you may not look at a Samsung device and say, "Wow, this is so much better than an iPad." I don't think many people would say that, but the truth is, having never used a Samsung tablet, but knowing that it would run the normal Android version of, say, Kindle for a big chunk of what I do on a tablet. Actually, it would be a lot better than an iPad. It would be a lot better.
See, I'm in this weird little bubble because I was using the iPad a lot more than I thought I would. And then I just stopped. I haven't used my iPad in, I want to say, 2 weeks.
Right. I've used mine a lot lately, but that's because I've been kind of testing with it. Like, what are the types of things I would spend time with? Like,
yeah, what do you do on the iPad? I'm curious.
Most of it is reading. You know, if I was traveling, I would rent movies and watch them on the plane, you know, that kind of thing. I put a couple of, you know, I don't spend a lot of time gaming, but there are certain types of games like a New York Times crossword puzzle type app or a, you know, not Sudoku, but like Solitaire or, you know, stuff like that. Just
like little BS games.
Brain games, you know.
Yeah.
Like stuff like that. I pass time doing that kind of thing.
Rattlehead.
Mostly it's reading.
Rattlehead in our chat said pornography. No, the iPad is awful for pornography. I do not recommend it. No, see, like I actually, here's my iPad here, and you could tell that I've really been using it because my battery's at 17%, and it's been at 17% for like a week. Right. I just go on Reddit. That's all I do on this thing.
Yeah, oh, that's good. Those kind of things too. That, by the way, that's another area that's actually difficult when you move from platform to platform. If you look at Windows Phone, Android, or iOS, there's a little bit of crossover. You know, Flipbook and or Flip, what's it called? Flipboard.
Flipboard. Yeah, and I use Flipboard a lot. That's another thing I do on here.
You know, they work across platforms. You know, but each of these platforms seems to have a couple of reading type apps, and by reading, I mean like news readers or whatever that are quite good, but they're kind of different between the different apps and like. The different platforms, and that is another little kind of a weird area. I don't think most people are moving between platforms or whatever, but you know, I have to kind of look at this stuff and then trying to figure out where the differences are. It's amazing how many little things there are, you know, that you can run into.
Yeah, the fascinating thing is like for the short amount of time that I'm using this device, and I like to think of myself sometimes as like, okay, if I was like a regular person, right? I didn't do this for a living. Yep. Would I buy an iPad? You know what? Out of all the stupid crap that I've bought over the last 5 years, right? I bought every stupid tablet. I bought a bunch of different phones, a bunch of different laptops. I bought like 6 Chromecasts, put it on every TV. I don't even use the thing. Yep. Like, that's not what normal people do, right? Normal people buy something and then they stick with it for a couple of years, and if it breaks, they buy a new one. I regret buying the iPad Air. And every time I pick it up, I regret buying this. Not because it's bad. It's actually one of the best tablets I've ever used. It's lightning quick. The display is stunning. The battery life is great. It's phenomenal. But my iPad 2 did everything that this could do.
Sure.
As good. I mean, I'm not playing high def games on this thing, obviously. I'm not doing hardcore anything on this. I just use it at night to go look at Reddit and go on Flipboard. And maybe play some stupid game, you know, like a baseball game. Oh,
by the way,
game.
that's another area. This is kind of a weird thing, but I will say the one area where the iPad, I would say the iPad and the Kindle Fire HDX actually come out well ahead of the Nexus. And I don't know about other devices, but you know, if you're reading in bed and your wife's, you know, next to you asleep, and you obviously don't want this like huge bright screen, not to mention the effect that might have in your eyes or your ability to sleep or whatever, the ability to dim the screen. Both in the OS and then in the reading app itself is crucial. And for whatever reason, like the iPad version of the Kindle works great. The Kindle HDX version of, you know, the Kindle app, I don't know what they call that, works great. And in Android, that thing blows.
Yeah.
It's terrible. Like it's so weird because you can't definitively say, like, if your primary point is just reading, well, maybe you can say, maybe you just say get a Kindle. I mean, if your primary point is Kindle, like reading on Kindle platform, you know,
get a Kindle. Yeah.
Except, you know, the problem is it falls apart in other areas. For example, I think it's Dark Horse Comics app, which is on iOS and Android and is not on Kindle. And that's like, that's infuriating. You know, these things, it's really hard just to be able to say, this is the one you want. It's so obvious because it's not. It's not. And anyone who tells you it is, maybe it's obvious for them, you know, for a particular person.
I tell people, just buy an iPad. Just spend the $500 and get an iPad.
Well, except why? I mean, but what about an iPad mini? What if they want a smaller screen?
Yeah, go with the iPad mini. It makes my life so much easier when I tell people to get an iPad, because when I tell them to go buy it,
never hear from them again.
Yeah, because then I never hear from them again. Like, that's it. They're done. They got the iPad. They get in. They're using it. Like, God forbid I told someone to go buy a Surface. Like, sure. It would be total, like, no. What do I do? Hey, Andrew, I'm telling you, this is a phone call I'm going to get. I'm trying to download VLC Player, and I can't install it.
Right. because it's an RT device.
Because it's an RT device, and that's not what they want to hear. And then it's
My wife is kind of infamous for not just being worse than ambivalent about technology. She really just does not care about technology. And the other day she came into my office and she said, I need a tablet that can read Word documents, that I can read Word documents on, that I can kind of just use around the house. I don't want to use my laptop. Yeah. I want to be able to use a tablet, right? She actually asked for a tablet. And I said, okay, yeah, we have a bunch of these devices. Here's a Surface 2. Here's the good keyboard. You know, here's a, you know, you log in with your account. Here's, you know, your documents are in
RT, not Pro, right?
It is RT.
Okay.
And I said, but here's the thing. This is a person who's never going to, she will never install an app ever. She couldn't care less. She's going to use what's on there. So I showed her. This is how, it's a little weird, but, and then off she goes. And so, she is not the type of person who will come to me with problems, but I'm going to wait a week or so and I'm going to, you know, how's it working out? I don't know. I'm very curious about this because she's as normal as it gets. And I don't.
That's a really good experiment.
Kind of weird about it. Like
you should write a blog.
Yeah.
Write an article on that. It's a great case study on how does the average person.
Normal person meets RT.
Normal person. Not average, but normal.
I'm just curious. I mean, I'm curious every step of the way. Like, does this thing seem slow to you? You know, does this thing? I don't know. It's going to be very interesting. I'm really curious about this.
Since we're on the Windows topic here,
yeah.
Oh boy, do I have questions for you?
Okay.
More shakeups internally within Microsoft. A lot of restructuring. The wording that was put out by the new CEO was fascinating.
Yep.
On why they're gone, pretty much. I mean, the way I read it, I saw that you have a article on your website. I didn't read the article, but pretty much what I got from it is that they don't want to play ball. They don't want to play the way that we want to play.
One reason or the other, yeah.
So now they're gone. Fascinating, which you're going to get more into on Wednesday with that. But I do want to talk about two things here. Windows 8.1 with Bing possibly being a free version, a free license, or a very low-cost license. And a enterprise version of Windows, a standalone enterprise version of Windows.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Bing first. This pretty much is to compete with the Chromebook.
Well, presuming this happens, right? Because
we
have to speculate a lot here. This is not something I have a big source on.
Your opinion? Do you think this is something that's going to happen?
Yeah. There's a bunch of things that I think are going to happen with Windows. You know, they just reduce the cost of licensing Windows on devices that cost less than $250. Tied to that, in Windows 8.1 Update 1, in Windows 8.1 Update 1, they are making it possible to run Windows on much lower-end devices. Devices with a 1 gigahertz processor with, I think it's 16 gigabytes of storage, right? So the, if you think about that kind of device, if you think about a Nexus 7, an iPad mini, that's where those devices are at. They always start with 16 gigs of storage, and they kind of go up from there. And so Windows to date, the baseline was 32 gigs of storage. Sounds like kind of a subtle distinction, but you know, every cost of every component counts, and that's part of the deal. And so you can save some money on the storage. You can save some money on the processor. You can save some money on the Windows license. All of a sudden, you can get these cheaper Windows devices in the market. So that's kind of a big part of Update 1. But I think that beyond that, they have to reduce the cost of Windows licensing across the board. I think they have to have a subscription to Windows, like they do for Office, where people can license it cheaply on an ongoing basis for, you know, 5 PCs, multiple PCs in the home licensing, and all that kind of stuff. I think that's got to be part of it. But this Windows 8.1 with Bing opens up the possibility, and I'm going to be clear, I'm speculating, of a free version of Windows that is perhaps backed by advertising. You know, a way to further undercut. I mean, because there's nothing cheaper than free. So how do we get to free? I mean, Microsoft still wants to make money on Windows. And this would be possibly a way for that to happen.
So what? Let's talk about the ways that they're going to advertise. It's, you know, the ideas with Bing. So what?
Yeah.
Like,
well,
what are we seeing? Like, you're going to open up a browser or an application. You're going to get like a 10-second ad spot? Yeah, like, what do we?
I hope not. There are actually ads all over Windows today. You just have to know where to look. So, for example, Microsoft touts this free streaming service. If Windows 8, or including RT, and you run Xbox Music, you can add music to your collection that sits up in the cloud. You can keep adding music as much as you want, individual songs, albums, whatever it is. When you sign into another PC or onto a phone, those things show up. They're there. But if you want to play them, if you actually want to play them on Windows, there are ads. And sometimes they're audio ads, like you see, like you hear on the radio. Sometimes they're video ads, which is a little strange. I mean, you're sitting there, you know, you can see it, like there's a I saw an Olive Garden ad, you know, one time. Stuff like that. It's very interesting. And so there are also Bing apps, and this I think is where the Bing thing comes in. One of the best things about Windows 8.1 in particular are the many excellent Bing apps, you know, news, finance, weather, travel, health and fitness, food and drink, and I might be missing one in there, but a bunch of Bing apps. If you look at those apps, which are incredible content apps, they have, you know, updated content regularly and all that kind of stuff, there are ads in there, and they're not obnoxious. You have to kind of look for them a little bit, and a lot of them are what we call house ads, meaning that they're ads for Bing or something like that.
Yeah, Office or...
Yeah, and I think the point there is simply to just test the system, you know, get it going. Like, what's this? How does this work, you know, when hundreds of millions of people are using it? And, you know, and to prove to people that this is viable and maybe they could get real advertisers. There's also, you don't see this too much, but there's a feature in Windows called Smart Search. And when you run certain searches... it gives you this amazing kind of panoramic experience. It's got results from your computer, but also results from the web, and they differentiate between images and videos, and then regular web results. And some of it's very graphical. There are occasionally ads in there as well.
Yeah.
How weird is that?
That is a little weird.
You run a search,
yeah.
And imagine that. I mean, imagine in Mac OS X, you run a search and an ad pops up. It's inconceivable. This is Windows. We're kind of
that new iPod Touch.
Yeah. Yeah, well, actually, right. So actually, maybe that's not so far-fetched. Anyway, Microsoft is doing it now. So you can turn off Smart Search if you don't like it. I'm thinking maybe they'll prevent that. I mean, it's not inconceivable. It's as awful as this is. If you just look at a screenshot of the Windows start screen, is it really hard to imagine?
I was about to say that.
An ad on there?
You know what? I would actually like that.
Okay.
I would love a Tide ad when I'm starting up my computer. But can you imagine?
I tried to. So if you use an Xbox, Xbox 360 or Xbox One now, I just noticed one for the first time, a Windows 8 style start screen, a dashboard they call it, there are ads in there. On Xbox One, there aren't ads kind of integrated into it yet, but I just booted this thing from scratch the other day. Usually, you know, it goes to sleep. And so if you wake up the Xbox, it kind of goes back to whatever you were doing. But in this case, it kind of rebooted. I don't remember why, but it rebooted. And when it came up, there's a giant tile in the middle of the front, you know, the first screen that you see, and it's what you're running now. If you're not running anything because the system just booted, what comes up now is an ad. Hey, maybe you want to get FIFA Soccer in the store, you know? I thought that was a little interesting. And so there is precedent for this. They're already doing it, and they're doing it in user interfaces that look a lot like Windows 8. So it's not hard to imagine that.
No, I think something like this is a good option. I mean, it's a fact that Microsoft, a Windows-based PC, cannot compete at $199. They're right. Never gonna. It's just impossible because of the licensing. HP cannot put out a $200 Windows 13-inch laptop or 11-inch laptop. It's not going to happen. But if they have an option like this, you know what? It's a great way to compete with that Chromebook. And know what? I guarantee 9 times out of 10, you give a Chromebook and you give a Windows machine, and they're both running the same hardware, you're going to pick a Windows machine at the same price.
Yeah, I hope so. My mind kind of wanders with this stuff because there's so many directions you can go in. But I could almost imagine something like this. Windows is free, and it has ads. But if you subscribe to this Windows 365 service, I'll call it, where you can attach up to 5 installs or whatever, however they choose to do it on a, you know, for an individual or for family, whatever. That removes the ads, you know, and those ads are gone for the entire time that your subscription is valid. And if next year comes and you say, yeah, I don't want to pay for this anymore, Windows doesn't stop working. Everything's fine.
As long as they don't limit the amount of applications you could run and like, you know, that weird stuff.
Yeah. Well, they did that.
Yeah. It didn't work out too well.
Yeah, no, it did not. The other theory, I guess, although the leak that we've seen of this Windows with Bing was an Intel version, but I guess the other thing you could say is, well, why not just make that RT, you know, give RT away, you know,
why not? It's already limited.
Right.
You know,
these are all just theory. I mean, again, these are ideas. None of this is based on anything.
It's interesting. I mean, this is a very, very interesting time for this company. In the history of this company that I followed, at least, I have never seen so many changes happening in a short period
of time.
Every
day, it's like, brace yourself. I mean, it's great. Really interesting. Yeah.
It makes it fun again to cover Microsoft.
It's not boring.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, for the average person.
I can't say it's going to end well, but the story is going to be amazing.
I mean, like the Cortana stuff, for example. Like, to me, that's fascinating. To a regular person, they may not find it interesting.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, but there's stuff happening every day.
Yeah.
And it just shows you that the company is getting really aggressive with the things that they want. It's not this dull company that people imagine. And this whole concept that they're becoming a little bit, but this, you know, oh, they're going to become IBM. IBM never did this. They're not becoming IBM.
That's true. IBM was always a little bit removed from people. I think that the, you know, from individuals, I guess. And I think part of IBM's transition was just to kind of embrace that. You know, if you think about this ginormous enterprise services company, you know, they can go in that direction, and it kind of makes sense for IBM. I mean, for all of the talk about, you know, Microsoft is their best stuff is business and all that, it is. But, you know, it's still dealing with individuals, right? The best stuff about Microsoft isn't necessarily Exchange on a server. It's how people interact with their email and calendar and all that kind of stuff on clients. And they actually do a good job with that. So.
Are you saying that IBM would never hit the mainstream with Lotus 1-2-3? Is that what you're talking about?
I am saying that when IBM bought that, it was over. Yeah.
Poor company. Lotus Notes. I know people that are still using it.
Neat.
Yeah.
It's just,
yeah. They're,
I always feel bad about that kind of stuff. Like Lotus, you know, as a standalone company, or WordPerfect is another example. Borland had, you know, obviously had developer stuff, but they also had the productivity stuff like Paradox. They all tried, you know, they tried, but
I think it's dead now. Lotus dead now? I think it is. Like recently it died. Like it hung on for a little too long.
Well, it's still, I mean, I don't know actually. Yeah, Lotus. The fact that we don't know is all we need.
I could tell you that in like 2010, I knew people that were still using Lotus.
Yeah. Oh no, I'm sure the software. Yeah. Well, I shouldn't say that. I'm not sure the software. I mean, there was a point where they, you know, they went with a OpenOffice based version of Smart Suite. Remember they tried that briefly?
Yeah.
I would be shocked if that was still a thing.
People loved Lotus Notes. Loved it. I think now Lotus, it's IBM Notes.
Oh, I'm going to forget the name of it now. Lotus came out with an amazing, it was kind of an alternative to 1-2-3 that I want to say ran on Apple or Next computers or something. And it was kind of amazing for the day. I can't remember the name of it, so it's a great story, Paul. But anyway, you know, they were always kind of at the vanguard of this kind of stuff. You know, Lotus Notes. Then IBM bought them. So that was the end of that.
I never imagined that we would be having a 5-minute discussion on Lotus on the show.
The good old days.
There goes the two guys talking at a bar conversation. And I do want to talk about the standalone Windows for Enterprise. This is something that they had said they weren't going to do a while ago, and we're going back to it if it's the case.
Sorry, I got distracted by my thought about improv. It was called improv.
Was it?
For the next up. Sorry, I just looked it up. Yeah, improv. Anyway, so I'm sorry. What is
Windows for Enterprise?
I'm sorry. Are we doing a podcast?
Yeah. Oh, by the way, if we're doing that, why don't we talk about DeskMate again? Because that was a great conversation right. that we had. I really get complaints. People like, are you guys talking about DeskMate again? Because I'm tuning out. That's it.
This is what I'll say about DeskMate. DeskMate was okay, but it was all about Dr. Opus. Was it Dr. Opus or Miss Dr. Opus?
Dr. No, Opus.
They just Opus.
Opus. Opus. Yeah.
It was like Opus. What was that? Like a Opus file manager? Is that the name of it? Why did I say Dr. Opus? Directory Opus. That's why. Directory Opus.
I still have to bring that Tandy downstairs. People, oh my god, you could download this right now.
It's still a thing.
Tandy's yep. DeskMate. There's a file to download it. Well, let me go to this thing. Hold on. Oh, nope, I closed it. Never mind. Not gonna happen. I had beautiful pictures of DeskMate.
Sure.
A tree and menu. That's what it was. The directory was called the tree.
The old file manager tree.
Yeah. I had Prince of Persia on there and Prodigy. Mm-hmm. 1990. Unbelievable. Let's talk about Enterprise for Windows. Sorry. Because this actually, I'm not an Enterprise guy at all, but this excites me because I kind of use it on an Enterprise level. I use it for my production machines. I don't need a lot of the stuff. I want it to just be Windows and that's it. What are we talking about when we talk about Enterprise for Windows if this comes out?
Well, there is an enterprise version of Windows 8 and 8.1, but it's limited availability. You basically need to have a software assurance contract with Microsoft.
And what do you get with that? Like, what's the difference?
So it's everything that's in Pro plus a bunch of capabilities that are unique. So Windows to Go is probably the big one that people have heard about, which is the ability to run Windows from a USB memory stick, you know, so that you can kind of carry that around with you. You have to plug it into a computer, obviously, and it uses the underlying hardware.
It kind of sounds like Ultimate, right?
A little bit. So it's not a true superset. You can't run Media Center on it, for example. You can't upgrade to it. You can't go from Pro to Enterprise like you could with Ultimate. But yeah, it is mostly a superset of Pro, and so the other features are like off the top of my head, compatibility with server 2012 R2 type features like branch cache, app locker, things like that. I'm sorry, I'm zoning on half of this stuff, but most of it is the types of features. If you're in a Microsoft shop, IT wise, you have Windows on the server. Windows in the client, and you're actually up to date with those things. Like you have modern versions of them. You have to have at least Windows Server 2012 for a lot of this stuff. That's the advantage of it. You get the integration between those things, and so branch cache. It was one of the other ones, I guess. Yeah, things like that. So just kind of modern Microsoft Enterprise technologies. But I think for the individual, the big news here is this Windows to Go possibility. I think this is kind of exciting for some people. In practice, it's not as wonderfully portable as you may like, you know, because one of the weird deals about booting up Windows on a PC that it's never seen before is that during that initial boot up, it has to kind of scan the hardware and load the correct drivers because every PC is a little bit different.
So imagine if you're doing this on like three different or four different PCs.
You would have a pretty horrible experience. Yeah. If you're using it on the same computer, it's great because the second time you do it, it boots normally and it's fine. It works kind of fine. But the idea is that it's self-contained. It's something that's very, if you lose it, it's no problem. The thing is protected by, or can be, should be protected by encryption. So no one can steal the information on it. You know, you can install apps and put data in there, and it's like this little standalone thing that people can kind of bring around with them. And it's good for, people come into the company temporarily, maybe, and you're not sure if you want them, getting the full meal deal or whatever. But, to date, it's been limited by these software assurance contracts, which are not only available to the biggest companies in the world, but are historically used by the biggest companies.
Interesting that feature is limited to Enterprise currently. I would have imagined that would have been a feature that would have been a big selling point for the regular person. I mean, there's a lot of people with a home office that would love to have a feature like that.
There are features in various versions of Windows that seem somewhat arbitrary. Windows 8 and 8.1 Pro have BitLocker and BitLocker to go device encryption capabilities. If you have a Windows 8 Core device, which is very standard, you know, small devices and everything, you don't have the ability to add encryption or manage it. You can, it will still work with an encrypted disk. It's fine. But, you know, I think most consumers, I think Windows should work this way by default. If you have a USB memory key or a micro SD card, so anything that could fall out, be lost, be taken by someone else and has your data on it, that thing should be encrypted.
Yeah.
Like, that should just be a feature of Windows. And by the way, Microsoft agrees because Windows RT has it by default. You know, it's just, you can't even manage it. It's just on. At least for the, for the disk that's in the device. So there's kind of a weird feature. I think Windows to go is, yeah, should be one that should be moved down the chain. And I'd like to see the BitLocker stuff moved down the chain. That should be, everyone should have BitLocker.
Windows 7 Ultimate had BitLocker, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Ultimate was a true superset. So back in that day, Ultimate was the one at the top, and it had everything that was in all the other versions.
I actually have a copy that many people don't. I have the Steve Ballmer edition.
Yeah.
And that one, actually, he yells at you when you're starting up. He just starts screaming at you about how great everything is.
He actually throws a chair across the room if you stop browsing Macs on the Apple's website.
Every time you install Firefox, it's like a little silhouette of a chair just flying across at the bottom. It's 8.1 RTM. It's hit RTM 8.1 update 1.
Yep.
Ahead of build, obviously, like you had said it was going to happen. Is this something that most users, average users, are going to be excited about? Because by the name, it's you know, it's not that exciting. Update 1. Nobody really understands that. But is this going to be another important game changer? Like 8.1, in my opinion, for a lot of people, is enough to be a game changer. You know, just bring that little start button back is enough for them. Or is this going to be enough for regular people?
So if you're already running Windows 8.1, update 1 is not a big deal. I actually think the biggest point behind update 1 is for new users, like new people to this platform. And they're going to get it with either one of those really low-end kind of devices that cost next to nothing, which is internal stuff that you don't really see, but it enables that. And I think that's super important. But it's also a way to kind of appease people on traditional non-touch computers, whether it's a desktop computer, or laptop, Ultrabook, whatever, where, you know, it's kind of a half step, but it presents some stuff that makes it easier for those people to use the system. And so in the apps, move the mouse around, you get like the toolbar, the window title bar, I guess it's called, at the top. There's an X up there you can close, with the mouse. Like, people like that. And when you right-click on the start menu, the start screen or the app screen, you get those kind of desktop-style context menus, you know. And it has the ability to pin Metro apps to the taskbar or display Metro apps that are running on the taskbar. And so that makes it a little more consistent for the people who are going to stick to the desktop environment for the most part and are using it with a mouse and a keyboard.
Any more news as far as Windows 9 goes, as far as how further developed desktop is going to be?
No. And to be honest, I have not, think about that, I have not heard much about Windows 9 since that initial big thing that I put out. I don't believe anything's changed there. In fact, I'll check sometime soon, but you know, the plan is for that big revelation to occur
at build.
At build. And I would be surprised if Microsoft didn't announce at least another update, a summer, a fall, probably a fall update
to 8.1
for Windows 8.1, and then Windows 9, you know, for the spring or next year sometime. So I believe that's still
the plan. So are we looking at you said that 9 is going to be, the release is getting pushed up. So we're not getting this fall release of Windows 9.
No, I don't know. I mean, Windows 9 was never going to happen in the fall. Windows 9 is April next year.
Yeah, which to me is great. I actually think that's a great time to release it because
I do too.
It's you're going to get back to school.
Yep.
Right? You're going to get back to school.
By the way, for the first time, I mean, that I can remember.
When did 95 come out?
August.
It was August. Yeah, it was in the summer.
It was too late.
Yeah.
August, that thing, I mean, you know, they were under a lot of pressure to ship that, you know, that year because they named it Windows 95. that might have benefited from a little more time in the
boy album. How the world have been different if it was Windows 96,
right?
It would have been totally different. Now, I'm curious about this. Build is actually going to be great this year because we got the Windows 9 stuff, Windows Phone, a lot of exciting stuff with that. Xbox.
Yep. Xbox.
And I was actually disappointed last year because we didn't get the information that we kind of wanted, like with Xbox, for example. Like I think we were all hoping that the announcement would have been, and we're opening it up to everybody to develop for. And we got this like weird half-assed, we are going to open it up, but
we'll see.
We'll see what happens. Yeah.
By the way, given the way the PS4 has taken off kind of gangbusters in a way that I don't think anyone anticipated.
Are you surprised by that? I am.
Yeah, I am. I know. I really am. And I mean that because, not because I personally think the Xbox One is better, which I do, but that literally has nothing to do with it. I'm sure we've talked about this notion that the Xbox fan base is that one Apple-like audience that Microsoft has. They're the most loyal people on earth.
Yeah.
Microsoft has been shitting on these people from day one. They make them pay for everything. It's ridiculous. They gladly throw
money
at everything.
You got to pay to use Netflix.
Yeah, it's nuts. So, this little marketing frou-frou around E3 with the PS4 versus the Xbox One, I think this is going to come and go. But, the more I look at this...
We're talking 6 million units.
Yeah. That's amazing. Amazing. Or a console in these days, when the sales of these things should be going down, frankly, not accelerating.
And it's still doing well.
And it's still doing well. And we can't claim anymore because, Sony obviously has some fan base of PlayStation fans that will buy anything that they make. I mean, obviously both camps have that. But I think once you pass the, 4 or 5 million, whatever. We're talking now. Yeah. People are just buying these things. I don't know why anyone would buy a PlayStation 4 personally.
Price, maybe it's the price, Paul. I mean, that $100 cheaper, $399, is far more appealing to
Yes, but again, I think for the initial crowd of for that fanboy crowd, the price doesn't matter. I would think for the most part, and then once you get past that crowd, $400, $500 is still really expensive for a device that you can only use with that one screen that's over there in that one room. And oh, by the way, when you're doing that, no one else can watch TV.
Yeah.
No one else can do, it's a really limited kind of thing. And yet it's there it is. And
bottom line, I think if you're gaming, your experience is going to be 99% identical. The reality
is. Oh, by the way, more than 99. Well, that will change over time. Titanfall is coming. That will change. There's no Titanfall on PS4. PS4 this year will get some exclusives that are decent or excellent.
No, I'm not talking about the titles. I'm saying the experience is going to be the same. One is not better than the other.
But that's an important part of it. I mean, beyond that, if you're going to do something like I'm going to play Assassin's Creed or I'm going to play Call of Duty Ghosts or whatever, having done that, I can tell you that the experience on the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox One are literally identical. Yeah. They're the same. So again, that may change. We'll see. But as of today, there's nothing to explain why. I mean, obviously,
that many units. Yeah,
but 6 million units. Seriously, I mean, that's crazy.
It's strange because really, if you think about it, it's not that much cheaper because it doesn't come with a camera. It doesn't come with a Kinect. Their cameras, it sucks. It's not what the Kinect is.
You don't want the PlayStation camera. It's terrible, but
it's not the same thing. But no. I think for a lot of people, if you're buying this for your 8-year-old,
I keep hearing these crazy things about it. Like, some people talk specs. I try to get specs out of the equation because specs don't matter to normal people.
Yeah,
and actually, specs don't matter. Period. Because like we just explained, the games are everything works fine. Games matter. I think exclusive games matter, but we don't have any exclusive games that are any good, so that's not part of it. $100 matters, obviously. But I like people talk about PlayStation got it right because they focus only on games.
No, they don't.
How? What do you mean? there's no crazy awesome game that makes it. That doesn't make any sense. The Xbox One does more, and by the way, it has a better user interface. I don't know. I really
there is something to be said about that. I mean, listen, if I were to defend Microsoft right now, I would put into account the $100. I would put into account the early release of the PS4. It came out 2 weeks early or a week and a half early. I also think there is
still... more markets, by the way. It is in a lot
more markets. I also think...
That's a big deal.
There is still this diehard Sony group that is sticking with them because, you know, the PlayStation has been a name in gaming for far longer than Xbox has.
Okay. A little longer. Yeah, the PlayStation came up before Xbox. Yeah, of course. Yeah, but...
if I were to defend Microsoft,
Sony got into the market by working with the Nintendo, and the same way that Microsoft got into the market by working with Sega. I mean, they did the same ploy, you know, to figure out the market. But
2 million units. I mean, that's a lot. That's. But again, this is still early on. Who's to say in a year from now, a lot of these people bought the PS4, they don't have the Xbox, and next Christmas, the numbers go back up for Xbox. I mean, that's going to happen. A lot of people have two consoles, like me.
Okay.
A lot of people do.
I'm not going to even guess at something like that. But all I can say is this. They've sold way more consoles than I thought they would, and it's notable. I mean, it's worth discussing. $100 is part of it, you know. But there's all these things that obviate it. Like, for example, there are no good games. So why buy it now? They're not going to run out of them.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be there next year. If you're going to – I play Call of Duty on an Xbox One. Why? I don't know. It's no different than playing it on an Xbox 360. It's the same thing on the PS4. I mean, like, soon we'll have Titanfall. And then I can say, okay, Titanfall, you know, big deal. You want that, fine. It's on Xbox. There is still nothing like that on Sony. And I don't know. Is there something coming down the pike that I'm not aware of that is their Titanfall? Is there some amazing PS4 game that's going to change everything?
I'm sure someone in the chat room knows.
That's what
someone
I'm wondering.
Tell us. We want to know. It's not going to be Final Fantasy VIII, apparently. That's what I was thinking.
Right.
Let's go back another
15
years.
Sonic Adventure 5.
it is fascinating, though, that they have jumped ahead. The international sales really do help. I mean, if you talk about 2 million, we're talking 2 million units. Not that
spread
tremendous.
Across, 20 markets or whatever it is.
Yeah, no, so a million here, a half a million there doesn't seem like much, but at the end, it ends up becoming 2 million units.
Well, okay, but then, okay. So I guess what I would say is Sony has marketed better than Microsoft. That's huge. Sony has also done a better job of distribution than Microsoft. And hey, heads up, that's huge too. So this is like saying, oh, Apple doesn't have big market share because they choose to only play in the high end. Yeah, whatever. That's their choice. It doesn't excuse it. So this is the same thing. Microsoft only is in 13 markets. That doesn't excuse it. Why isn't Microsoft in more markets? That's not an excuse. It's a reason.
Yeah, why aren't they in more markets?
I don't know. You may recall last fall at some point I don't know if they have the number of markets. I think they went from, they're going to launch in 29, they went down to 15, or I'm sorry, they were going to launch in 20 something and went down to 13 or whatever it was. I think they dropped 11 markets. And so those markets will come online, sometime this year. And of course, there are many, many other markets they need to be in as well. Why are they, why? I don't know. But yeah, so Sony's beating them and it's bad. The problem is perception problems are not pretend problems. Perception problems are real problems.
Major problems.
And they build on themselves.
Windows 8?
People, every time Sony comes out and says, hey, we just sold another kajillion, these stupid console things, people who are on the fence, people who are waiting for their next big game, or people who are saving up, people who don't know what they want to do, whatever it is, this is all in the back of the head. Oh my, Sony killed them. Yeah. They don't even know what E3 is. What they remember is Sony outmarketed Microsoft. The big story, it was everywhere. And then Sony was outselling Microsoft. And then, and look, now they're outselling them a lot. I mean, it builds. And so these perception, we can point to all these things and explain why they don't matter or they're not real or whatever it is. But the truth is, if this growth trajectory keeps going and going, it gets worse. The perception becomes the reality. They'll just run away with this generation.
Yeah, I think Windows Vista is a great example of perception. I mean, they had some problems, but the perception was far worse than the actual thing. Windows 8 is another example of that.
Yeah.
Yep. It becomes a reality after a while.
I give Microsoft a little credit. They're responding to Windows 8 a lot faster than they did with
really
Vista.
Quick. Yeah.
And so, they've learned something, I guess.
Well, Xbox as well. I mean, they were. And here's the other thing also. And if we go back a year, the perception of Xbox from the online community was very, very negative. I mean, crazy hardcore negative, where people were saying, oh, this is going to be awful. They're not going to let you bring your games, and you can't do this, and you can't do that. Or the rumors had spread rampant. We put out a
Xbox
video.
The Xbox One, as originally envisioned, right, is better than the thing we have now. And that's what kills me, is that a bunch of people who freaked out and complained, who, you know, again, it's kind of hard to characterize people that I don't know and will stereotype them. But I honestly believe a lot of the complaining was just because that's what people do online. They complain. They were never buying the thing anyway. They hate Microsoft.
But it wasn't even true, Paul. That was the whole point.
I know, but then they drive these changes into the product, and now they've kind of, you know, family sharing. Yeah, it's gone. You guys complain. We don't want that anymore, you know. I think these things will come back, and I think they'll get it right over time, and I think that's fantastic. But the problem is going to be if it's a year from now and everything's right as rain and the way it should be, but Sony is still outselling them 2-1, you know, that becomes an issue. And you don't have to look too hard at the history of video games to understand what happens to those companies and those platforms that get destroyed like that. You know, all these people who are eagerly trying to explain that Microsoft should never get rid of the Xbox. It's way too important. I have a newsflash for you. If the Xbox One doesn't take off, Xbox is not important. Now it becomes a no-brainer. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Really fascinating. Yeah. Couple things before we wrap up. Of course, we were going to launch the Patreon campaign this week, Paul, but we decided we're going to hold off another week because we're launching the new website. We're launching a new logo that Paul actually saw. I showed Paul the logo. He likes it.
Which one did you go with, though?
I haven't decided yet. Okay. But you like them all, apparently.
I know. I a lot of help.
A lot. I asked Paul, I'm like, hey, which one do you like? He goes, all of them. Most of them.
You know, they're
they're all pretty good.
Not dramatically different. I mean,
no. So we're doing that. We're going to launch a Patreon campaign. Someone suggested for the Patreon campaign when we set goals, like if we reach $1,000 an episode, Andrew has to smash his Nintendo Wii U.
Wow.
On camera.
I mean, obviously, I don't care.
I would do it. For $1,000 an episode, I will smash my Wii U. I think that's enough incentive
thousands of dollars would it take for you to smash the iPad?
Oh, wow. Because
I'm considering making a donation.
let's see. How much to smash the iPad? Yeah, you know what?
How much?
For 2,000 an episode, I'll smash the iPad live on the air. And then I'll cry.
Just like hug remains.
It's remains. It's broken. Position. Devastated screen I'm going to be hugging. I'll smash it for 2000. So I think we should set a goal like that. For every, you know, $1,000, I'll smash something. MacBook. I could smash the MacBook. 10,000. That's my goal. $10,000 an episode. I will take a baseball bat to this MacBook. So we'll do something fun like that. I thought it was a funny suggestion. We're going to launch that. Also, guys, if you want to help us out, you want to support the network, you could do so by using our Amazon affiliate link. You could do that by going to gfq.co/Amazon. I know a lot of you guys are using it. I appreciate it. I know you guys are using it because a lot of it is Microsoft products. I know exactly what show the listener is from. Like, I can't tell who's buying it, obviously, but like I get a list of like products at the end of the week. And like a lot of times it's like a Windows laptop or like a battery for a Toshiba laptop. I'm like, he's watching What the Tech. And then I'll get like something ridiculously inappropriate. I'm like, he's watching another show.
Product or.
Oh, some of it is very inappropriate, Paul. And I'm surprised Amazon sells it. Very surprised.
Okay.
I appreciate you guys buying it. And using our Amazon link. It's a tiny little fraction that we get, but it really helps. gfq.co/Amazon. You can follow Paul at The Rot on Twitter. What's your gamer tag, Paul? Is it The Rot also?
No, it's just my name. Just Paul.
Paul. Therot. Paul Therot.
Paul Therot, yep.
Mine is X Andranic X.
You know, my original Xbox gamer tag was like lowercase x Paul. You know, like X Paul.
Yeah.
Like X. And one day I signed in. It was like, there's a problem. You have to, you know, change something, blah, blah, blah. And I lost it. And they wouldn't let me have it back. I said, this one's already taken. So
that's
I had
so weird.
Really kind of neat short name. And they took it from me.
I think the X thing was in, right? Like when Xbox.
Oh, it was Xbox. I was like, yeah. I signed up for this thing whenever it first appeared, you know, for Halo 2 or something. And yeah, that was very disappointing.
So you could add him there and play games with Paul on the internet.
Yeah,
WinSuperSide.com, of course, his website. Your book, Paul. I hear you're writing the ultimate guide to Deskmate 8.1.
Yes. To be followed by the Lotus 1-2-3 Super Bible. Yeah.
You know, how much for you to write that book? If we're making $20,000 an episode, would you write that book?
Yeah. Probably for that much.
Excellent. Because I think we should do that.
Sure.
$20,000 an episode. Paul's writing the ultimate guide to Deskmate. And how it'll save you.
Right. How to replace File Explorer with the directory Opus type program of your choice.
You know, I actually have a Deskmate book in my bookshelf upstairs. I have like a little walk-in closet, and I got a bookshelf there with a lot of my books. I have Learning Deskmate on a Tandy.
Wow.
Yeah. Perfect condition. Never opened it.
That's weird.
Yeah. Never opened. But you can follow Paul, of course, on Twitter, like I said, and his phenomenal show in Mary Jo Foley and Leah Laporte every Wednesday at 2 p.m. East, Windows Weekly on the Twit Network. One of my favorite shows, I'm sure favorite shows for most of our audience here. They're big Paul Theroux fans, and so am I. I'm just here to look swarthy and ethnic, and Paul is the brains of the group here. Subscribe to us, guys. We're a podcast. Are everywhere. Windows Phone, iOS, everywhere podcasts are available. Subscribe. It helps us out a lot when you do subscribe, because then we go to, you know, Audible and be like, look, we got 20,000 subscribers to this podcast. Look how many people love us. And they help us out when we do that. All right, guys. That's it for this week. You can send me an email. I know a lot of you guys have been sending emails. I'm going to get back to all of you. I'm really backed up with the emails. So keep sending them. guysfromqueens@gmail.com. And we'll see you all next week on What the Tech. Good night, everybody.